They sting. They swarm. They require equipment and treatments that can be expensive. And yet, classes for new beekeepers in western Wisconsin are full every year, and local beekeeping organizations are growing in numbers. This hour on the West Side, we explore beekeeping in western Wisconsin and some of the challenges and opportunities those beekeepers encounter. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Welcome to the West Side. Our guests for the hour are Don Hauser of Chippewa Falls. Don is president of the Chippewa-Eau Claire County Beekeepers Association. Don Hauser, welcome.
Good morning.
Our another guest from the Eau Claire Chippewa-Eau Claire Beekeepers is Corey Grody. He's an urban beekeeper. He's from Eau Claire and also a member of the Eau Claire of the Chippewa-Eau Claire County Beekeepers. Corey Grody, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Later on this hour, we'll hear from April Kustov. She's an apiary inspector with the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And we'll also hear later from Pam Rasmussen, a manager for siting and land rights with XL Energy, about a program they have to make life better for pollinators. Love to have you join the conversation. Are you a beekeeper? And if so, how'd you get into it? What's your experience been? Are you wondering if this is a hobby or passion you should invest in? Call with your questions, comments, and opinions at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. And for the sake of disclosure, I am a novice beekeeper myself and a member of the Chippewa-Eau Claire County Beekeepers Association. Since becoming a beekeeper, I've killed thousands of bees. So I have that experience behind me. Well, let's begin. I'd like to start by asking both Corey Grody and Don Hauser, and how long, or what inspired you to become a beekeeper, and how long you've been at it, what got you started. Corey Grody, why don't you begin?
It started for me about 6 years ago. My daughter was taking a class over at Regis High School. I think it was her biology class, and they were talking about pollination and the importance, and we just happened to be going to Farm and Fleet over in Halley to pick up some stuff, and they had a bee exhibit put on by the bee club, and it sparked our interest even more, and then we were hooked. So this became a project for both my daughter and I that we did together.
How long ago was that, Corey Grody?
That was 6 years ago once we started looking into it and taking the classes, and I've been keeping bees now for 5 years.
Great. Don Hauser, tell us about your beekeeping history.
Well, mine started about 7 years ago. As I was retiring, I was looking for something that would keep me busy. And I actually went to the Northern Wisconsin State Fair and ran into the booth that's there and spoke to them and said, okay, well, that will keep me busy. And it did. And it grew from one hive to a passion of about 12, 14 hives.
Wow. Okay. So, and by the way, the fair is this week, the Northern Wisconsin State Fair in Chippewa Falls, and the Beekeepers Association that you belong to and that you are president of is going to be there with that booth.
There will be a booth with live bees and lots of information present there and a chance to speak with current beekeepers.
Kind of like a petting zoo for bees.
It is, but we don't pet.
Well, Don, you're president of the Chippewa-Eau Claire County Beekeepers Association, and I know on Facebook it's simply Chippewa Valley Beekeepers. As you think about members of the organization, are there other motivations out there than the ones you and Corey talked about for getting into beekeeping?
Some of our members are just very interested in pollination and doing anything they can toward all pollinators. And in that fashion, they're able to use beekeeping as their little part of that. We have other members who enjoy the camaraderie there and really aren't keeping bees at all, but just like that in the past. They've also come into play with beekeepers that we call sideliners, which are those beekeepers that aren't making it a business, but they're just a little bit beyond the hobby stage. Mm. And then we have a lot of hobbyists. Probably the majority of our members are hobbyists.
And what would be the definition of a hobbyist, maybe from size of hive?
The hobbyist
or
is
size of yard.
The hobbyist is going to be in the anywhere from 1 to 5, maybe as many as 8. Mm. And the sideliner goes anywhere from 8 to 50. That would be a very large sideline.
Wow, yeah.
But then the commercial beekeepers, they're in the hundreds and thousands of hives.
Wow. So Corey Grody, you live within the Eau Claire city limits and are part of a growing trend of urban beekeepers. Why is keeping bees in the city becoming more popular, do you think?
I think the overall pollination and the spreading of the word of the importance of pollinators has sparked that urban beekeeping. It's also part of that sustainable living, people wanting to have their or to grow their own vegetables in their garden, looking for extra pollination. And of course, you know, when you do that, you do get that golden reward that we call honey. I think that's why it's becoming more urban.
I saw in an article, urban beekeepers in New York worry that the city might hit bee capacity because there aren't enough wildflowers to go around. A similar situation happened in London. Is that a worry in communities here in western Wisconsin?
I think it is maybe a little worry now that we're having less land and more city growth. But it is important for people in the city, you know, just to plant a backyard garden, a flower pot with mixed wildflowers, you know, a tomato plant. You know, anything that grows helps pollinators in general, especially the honeybees.
Popular though it may be, there are some particular challenges to keeping bees in the city, are there not?
Yeah, there's a lot in the city ordinance that we have to be aware of before you become a beekeeper. That's why it's very important for you to do the research before you start jumping in and buying equipment. The city ordinance of Eau Claire requires you to attend a beekeeping class. It requires you to have 80% consensus from your neighbors within 50 feet. It requires an inspection from the health department. It also requires an annual inspection through somebody of the bee club or a state inspector, which would be April. So there are fees associated with it. You know, you do have a $75 yearly permit fee. And for your first-time beekeeper, there is a $95 health department inspection fee of your property.
Do we know what that $75 funds?
You know, actually, we do not. I actually, working with the council on that to figure out why the prices did increase to $75. They were a lot lower the previous years, and 2019 was the first year that it increased to $75.
We're talking, go ahead, Corey.
We are thinking that part of that increase is because it used to be the responsibility of the beekeeper itself to go get the signatures from your neighbors for approval or disapproval to keep the hives.
We're talking about beekeeping here in western Wisconsin, and we are happy to have your call at 800-228-5615. Go ahead and join us at that number, 800-228-5615. Give us your honeybee story. Let's move back to our guest, Don Hauser. Even in more rural areas than what Corey is dealing with, do beekeepers have trouble with their neighbors who may be a little less enthralled with having honeybees nearby?
Actually, I don't think we've experienced that in any fashion. Most neighbors are understanding the need for bees, and if the beekeeper is taking the precautions and the placement of the hives seriously and doing what's best for the entire neighborhood, that usually isn't a problem. What is a problem out in the rural areas is the amount of corn and soybeans, which serve the bees no purpose at all. Mm. And that kind of monoculture approach is probably the most challenging thing to some of the countryside beekeepers.
Well, yeah, because here in rural Wisconsin, when you're talking about rural areas, you're generally talking about being on or near working farms with crops and pasture land. So you would think that that would be a great place for because those things have to pollinate as well, but but for honeybees, not so much.
Correct. Pasture land seems to work fine, and ditches work fine, and the woods works well. It's the monoculture of corn and soybeans that dominates the landscape.
Like most food production, agriculture, breeding for preferred qualities is part of improving the stock. Corey Grody, what kind of qualities are available in honeybees? What kind of choices?
Well, there's many choices besides wildflowers. You know, they're very important to the apples, the strawberries, you know, basically anything in your garden. A lot of people in the city like those small gardens, and just outside city limits, you know, the apple orchards and strawberry farms and whatnot. They serve a very viable purpose.
Actually, and that's interesting because there are some flowers that are more attractive and some pollen sources that are more attractive to honeybees. But I'm actually wondering about the bees themselves, the sorts of qualities that, you know, one can pick up. You know, are there traits in the bees that you purchase bees to get to?
I myself, I have an Excel property next to me, so it's all wildflower. But, you know, they like white clover, which is a good nectar source. They like basswoods. So some of the nice flowering trees, shrubs, you know, a lot of those are, I don't know if there's one or another that the bees then prefer. Maybe that's a question for Don, who's a little more experienced, or April.
We're genetically, we call them races. And the most common race that we get is Italian, followed by Carniolan. Both of those are European bees. But then some of the beekeepers are experimenting with Russian bees, which are coming out of Siberia and seem to be hardier for our area.
Is that the key trait you're looking for, is you can manage to make it through a Wisconsin winter?
Winter survival is the key for beekeepers in this area. It's really all about winter survival and getting a bee that is adapted to our area, which is why another race that's out there, or I shouldn't say race as much as a breeding genetic factor, is called a Saskatraz bee, which is bred out of Saskatchewan. Well, they are surviving Canadian winters, so therefore you think that they could survive Wisconsin winter.
Yeah.
But it's all touch and go many times along the way.
Let's bring in Steve from Colfax. He'd like to join the conversation. Steve, thanks for joining us. We lost Steve, I'm afraid. Sorry about that, but let's move on. Don Hauser, how does one go about getting honeybees? Do they come in the mail?
They can, but I think the preferred way is for them to be purchased through organizations like ourselves. We buy in bulk. Actually, we just facilitate the buying, and then those bees are delivered right to our meeting place at the WWIB building in Halley, and our beekeepers pick them up there. Other than that, the beekeepers will travel to do a pickup. There are sources in the cities. There are sources in Rhinelander, et cetera.
Where do they come from?
Most of the bees are package bees from California or Texas or Georgia. And in those cases, they simply take 3,000 to 8,000 bees. They pour them into a box, and they put one queen into that box in a small cage, and then they are shipped by truck across the country to our pickup spots. So the big organizations, the big honey producers, will do that every spring as they go into the package business. And some say that they make more money from their packages than they do from the honey that they have. They also make more money from the pollination in California and in Texas. Although one of the larger beekeeping areas that surprisingly is North Dakota because of the hay crops and the sunflower crops that they have there. So we buy those packages, and they range anywhere from $120 to $160. And you get a certain number of bees. I'm not sure how they ever weigh a 3-pound package, but they have a system for doing that.
Yeah.
And so put the queen in there, and it takes off in April.
So a 3-pound package, how many bees are we talking?
5,000, 6,000.
Wow. All right. Well, that's a lot. We are talking beekeeping in western Wisconsin with Corey Grody and Don Hauser of the Chippewa-Eau Claire County Beekeepers Association. Coming up, we'll hear from April Kustov, who serves northern Wisconsin as an apiary inspector. We'll talk about some of the biggest challenges honeybees face in this part of the country and what can be done to meet those challenges. Give us your honeybee story or your question about beekeeping in western Wisconsin. Join us at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. We're talking honeybees. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and this is The West Side on the Ideas Network. Here on The West Side, we're talking about beekeeping, honeybees in particular. Don Hauser and Corey Grody of the Chippewa-Eau Claire Beekeepers Association are our guests, and they're joined now by April Kustov, who is the state apiary inspector for northern Wisconsin. She works in the Division of Agricultural Resource Management within the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. April Kustov, good to have you along.
Hi.
Now, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, pollinators are responsible for 1 out of every 3 bites of food we take. April Kustov, what role do the beekeepers play in that production?
Well, the exciting thing about beekeeping is that when you're a hobbyist or a sideliner or a big migratory beekeeping operation, you can play a really important role in your neighborhood because bees are really important, not just honeybees, but also native bees as well are really important when it comes to pollination. And things that you are doing in your yard can have a direct impact on the bees, their health, and their population. So it's really exciting that we're always talking about, pesticides or colony collapse disorder, things like that are happening. But what can you do on a personal level in your own yard to help promote pollinator populations?
So apiary is not a word that we use every day. What's the definition in your mind?
So that is basically your yard where you keep your honeybees.
Very good.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that job. What do you do as a beehive inspector?
So as an inspector, probably the most important role that we play in the state of Wisconsin is that we do quality control inspections for the migratory beekeepers that are moving past our state boundaries. And a lot of people don't realize that. Before the migratory beekeepers are allowed to leave in the fall, they need to have their hives inspected, a percentage of all of their hives. Now we're talking about thousands and thousands of hives, so we can't go through every single one.
But you're sampling.
But we are sampling. Yeah. We're going through, we're taking 10 to 20%. If we see something suspicious, we'll sample more yards. So that is probably the most important thing we're doing to help protect the bees, our native bees here, and also just the honeybees that are being transported around. But on a smaller level, myself or Dan Zeely, we're the two inspectors in the state, and we will go out to people's yards, and we will just do quality control for them. It's a free service that we provide, and we'll just work with you in your hives and just look at how your queen is looking. The queen is very important in the health of a beehive. Look for any pests and diseases that you may or may not be seeing. Help you make a plan. Beekeeping plans are so important. And so when something does come up in your hive, you're not surprised. You're not, you have a plan. You are going to implement either a treatment or some sort of management practice to help keep your hives healthy and going.
Your territory is all of northern Wisconsin, so you get to see a variety of beekeeping in this area.
Yep.
Can you describe the range of beekeeping practices you've observed in this part of the state?
Well, what do you mean by beekeeping practices,
when you get to a place, I'm not exactly sure. I guess my guess is that you see a lot of different things, and I'm just wondering, from beekeeper to beekeeper, what are some of the differences you see? What are some of the similarities?
Well, I think most of the differences stem from the fact that we have different We have different climates in Wisconsin. And people don't realize that, but the climate down here is way different than, say, the climate in Bayfield, the climate in Minocqua. The exciting thing for beekeepers in the Eau Claire area is that you do have a lot of pasture land. You have a lot of open spaces. You have a lot of clover blooming. When you get up around Minocqua, which is where I'm from, you're in pine country. And so your practices are going to change related to what are you feeding your bees, how long are you feeding them, when are you putting your pollen patties on, when are you taking them off, when are things blooming in your area. So in that aspect, beekeeping changes based on the climate that you're dealing with and the food that is there. But when it comes to like varroa mite treatments or some of the other treatments, that's going to be pretty standard across the state. But with the Eau Claire area here specifically, there are a lot of beekeepers in this area. And so you have to be more on the lookout for different diseases and pests that can spread rapidly from hive to hive. Where in northern Wisconsin, you maybe are a little more isolated with your hives, and so you have more freedom in the sense of your hives probably aren't going to be, I hate to use the word contaminated, but things aren't going to be spreading so much from yard to yard.
We're talking beekeeping here on the west side. 800-228-5615 is your number if you'd like to join the conversation. Nationally, according to Been Informed or Bee Informed Partnerships, the latest survey released last month, U.S. beekeepers lost nearly 40% of their honeybee colonies last winter. That was a record since that organization started surveying beekeepers 13 years ago. Here in western Wisconsin, a survey by the Dunn County Beekeepers Association showed a 70% hive loss over this past winter, and a survey of the Chippewa-Eau Claire County Association members shows that just over half had either no hives or one hive survive the winter. For sure it was a cold winter, but we expect that sort of thing in Wisconsin. April Kustov, what's killing our bees?
Well, that's a really difficult question to answer just with one answer. But one thing I would say when I go out and I talk to hobbyists and, or, you know, beekeepers, I tell them you want to prepare your bees for the worst winter, for a fall that ends quickly, for a spring that never comes. You want to prepare your bees for just for the worst possible scenario. And if you do that, you will have a higher rate of success for overwintering. When I hear those numbers, it makes me really sad because I don't think it has to be that way. One of the major things that we are dealing with as beekeepers is the varroa mite. And I really encourage people when I come out to yards, we'll do either powdered sugar rolls or alcohol washes to let people know where their varroa mite population is at that time and whether or not they need to be doing management, different management practices, whether it's through a treatment, whether it's through pulling drone comb, making a split where you're splitting your brood, and so you have that brood break. Whatever it is, we really want to keep those varroa mite levels low because the more we learn about the varroa mite, the more we realize how destructive they really are.
And I understand that there's some new research that gives apiarists and beekeepers a little more insight as to how the varroa mite causes these problems in bees. What is that new information?
Right. So in January, they came out with a published study showing that, so in the past, we have just assumed that the varroa mite was feeding on what we would call bee blood. But what they have discovered actually is that the varroa mite is feeding on the fat bodies on the bees. And people say, well, what does it matter? The varroa mite is feeding on the bee one way or the other.
Right.
What matters is that that fat body in that bee is helping the bee stay healthy. It's helping them detoxify. It's helping them deal with pesticide exposure. That fat body built up inside of them helps them get through the winter so that when there's not protein in the spring in the hive, they can use the fat body in their own bodies to feed their brood. And what we're finding is so the varroa mite is depleting them of their fat bodies, and so the bees cannot brood up in the springtime. The bees are not healthy enough to make it through the winter. So it's really important that we understand what the varroa mite is after so that we can help the bees stay healthier to make it through the winter.
Now, last summer, when my wife and I were first-year beekeepers, you came to our home at our invitation to inspect our hives.
Yep.
And during that visit, you did a sugar roll, which you talked about earlier, to help me get an idea of how the hives were doing versus the varroa mites. Can you describe that process? I found it fascinating and kind of odd, but interesting.
So it's as beekeepers, we have wonderful tools at our disposal to help our bees. And so basically what you're doing is when you say a powdered sugar roll, that's exactly what you're doing. You're taking a sample of bees and you're rolling them in powdered sugar. And what that does, it coats the bees in the powdered sugar and they don't like being coated. And so they'll start cleaning that powdered sugar off their bodies. And as they clean that powdered sugar off, the varroa mite actually falls off of them. And so when you shake that powdered sugar out of the jar, you can actually count your mites. So we have a controlled number of bees that we put in the jar. So we want people to sample a half a cup of bees. And if you're finding three varroa mites on that half a cup of bees, we're actually encouraging people to treat. And some people get a little upset. They think that's too aggressive. But what we're finding is, so our treatment threshold is a three mite count. And what we're finding is that when you're already at that five mite count, your hives are starting to collapse. They're already starting to go into decline.
How many bees in a half a cup?
About 300.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, and you can see the wonderful thing, the varroa mites are terrible, but the wonderful thing about them is that you can see them with your eyes.
Right.
And you don't need a microscope. You can see them running around in that sugar. And so it's really easy to count them.
Talk about what the treatment options are at that point then.
So if you do a powdered sugar roll or an alcohol wash, the nice thing I should also say about the powdered sugar roll is it doesn't kill the bees. It just basically coats them in sugar. If you do an alcohol wash, that will kill your bees. But if you're finding a mite count of three, it depends on the time of year. We have different products that are available to beekeepers that they can put on their hives. They work in different temperatures. They, if you have honey supers on your hives, you're limited on what your treatment options are. And so we have different treatments for different times of the year. So as an example, right now, if you were to go out and do a powdered sugar roll on your hives and you roll a three, we would encourage you to use either the Mite Away Quick Strip treatment or the Formic Pro, because both of those treatments are safe to use when you have honey supers on your hives.
Talk about, if you're not familiar with the term honey super, what does that mean?
So the honey super is basically the excess honey that the bees are producing that the beekeeper would remove in the fall and harvest for themselves or to sell. So it's basically any box above the brood chamber.
It's interesting to me that a number of beekeepers are attracted to the idea that the bees are natural pollinators and that they produce honey, which has a premium quality when it's local. Yet what you're saying is that chemical treatments are needed to keep our hives alive. Is chemical treatment the only option?
They are not the only option. We also encourage people to pull out drone comb. Drones are the male bees, and we have found that the varroa mite is more attracted to the male bees because they're locked up, I guess you could say, the longest. And so the varroa mite has more opportunity to reproduce with the drones than they would with a worker. And so we encourage people, if you find a frame that's like all drone comb, pull it out. If you have chickens, your chickens will love to eat them. But it's a way that you can pull all the mites that are locked away with the drones. You can pull them out of the hive and remove them. We also encourage people to do, say, a split. You want to do that option, though, more in the springtime. Because you want your bees to have enough time to build up and be strong enough for the fall.
Split, you mean turn one hive into two?
Yep, turn one hive into two. Or if you are just going to requeen a hive, you could take the queen out, wait a little while, so there's a split in the egg lane, and then you could introduce a new queen.
I'd like to bring our beekeepers, Don Hauser and Corey Grody, back into the conversation right now. Don is president of the Chippewa Eau Claire County Beekeepers Association. You help teach the beginning beekeeping courses that are offered each year at Beaver Creek Reserve near Fall Creek. How much do you talk about varroa mites, and what methods do you use to defend your own hives from varroa mites?
Well, the classes that we have at Beaver Creek, we've had them for 4 years now, and there's a series of three classes. The first class that we have, the first Saturday of March, specializes in trying to convince beekeepers, potential beekeepers, that this is a great hobby, but also to keep their eyes open for what they're getting into. In March, they're able to make that decision because they don't have to purchase bees. Most of the people who attend that class do go ahead and purchase bees. Then in May, we sort of cover what are you getting into? Now that you've jumped in, what do you need to do in the early parts of the summer to sustain those bees, to manage those bees? Beginning beekeepers start with a package, which is and usually not enough drawn comb to get started with that. So they're up against that first year of beekeeping, which is a challenge. And then in August, we concentrate on harvest and preparations for winter. And trying to get those healthy bees that April just mentioned fattened up and ready for the winter months. And then we talk about how to actually winter them. So we follow the season through the classes, and I think that works out quite well. And usually people in the classes match up with someone as a mentor, that they have someone to call when they see something that they don't recognize, or what do I do next type of questions.
So you don't have to have April come to your hives every week.
Correct.
To explain what's going on. Corey Grody, you told me in conversations you and I have had in the past that you try to limit the use of chemical treatments by finding natural ways to help your bees defend against mites. What are some of the methods you use?
Method I use, rhubarb has a natural insect repellent, if you would call it, or varroa mite repellent in it. A lot of the chemicals that are used are either, some of the natural ones are either from concentrated hops or concentrated rhubarb. For some reason, the actual chemical name is
oxalic acid.
Oxalic acid. So rhubarb leaves themselves have oxalic acid in them, and I use the rhubarb leaves on top of my brood chambers quite heavily, usually two or three thick. Let the bees chew through them, crawl through them, so they get the oxalic acid on them themselves. I do it that way because I don't feel a need to go ahead and over-concentrate the beehive. I don't want to suit up and wear a mask. I feel that if I need to wear a mask that heavily, then it's too concentrated for me. But many beekeepers find a method that works for them. That works for me, and that's what I continue to do.
So I just have a quick question for you. Are you doing powdered sugar rolls or alcohol washes before and after you put these leaves on, just so you know kind of at what levels these rhubarb leaves are working for you?
I have done the powdered sugar rolls in the spring, and then I also try to do it after I pull the honey supers off to see what I'm going into in the winter.
And what kind of numbers are you seeing?
I was running the 3 to 4.
Okay. So do you also do splits? Do you do brood breaks? Anything?
I do not.
Oh, okay.
So no, I do maintain some of the drone. You mentioned it earlier. If I have frames that are full of drones, I do pull drones. But I haven't become that advanced yet. You know, I'm still a fairly new beekeeper, so, you know, maintaining splits and continuum, something that I have not done.
Gotcha. And do you mind me asking what your overwinter success is?
Overall, last year I lost all three hives. Basically, that was a failure on the beekeeper of starvation. It wasn't extremely long, and I didn't leave enough emergency feed for them. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I was running right about the 75%.
Hmm.
April Kustov, on Friday, and I want to get to at least one more question here before we go to break. On Friday, the Ideas Network, Kate Archer-Kent, during the morning show, interviewed a biologist at Cornell University whose research shows a resurgence of wild honeybees after a steep decline in the mid-1990s. He says the wild bees have better genetics due to natural selection because they haven't been treated with chemicals. So wouldn't evolution eventually develop bees that are able to fend off varroa mites on their own?
That is also a really difficult question to answer. Thank you. my thought process on that is it's going to take a lot of research to defend that train of thought, because these, quote, wild bees are splits from hives that have been managed by people. And so I would be curious to know what area he's seeing a buildup of these wild bees. I would be curious to find out how long these bees have been wild. Is it years? Is it a year? There's a lot of factors that go into it. I do see this trend where we are starting to consider these wild bees to be these magic bees that are magically immune to the varroa mite. I have never experienced a bee that is immune to the varroa mite. Now, there are some bees that are more hygienic than others. And earlier in the program, when we were talking about the Russian bees, the Carnolians, the Italians, there are some bees that are more hygienic than others. And those more hygienic bees, that means they're cleaning themselves off more, which means the varroa mite that is attached to them, they are pulling those mites off more, and they're throwing them basically off their bodies. Mm-hmm. And so it's that these wild bees are just more hygienic bees, that they're able to deal with the varroa mites better, or is it that they actually have, quote, built a resistant to the varroa mite? And until I see the research proving that these bees have become resistant, I'm really skeptical that these wild bees are making it better than managed bees, because the varroa mite, dealing with the varroa mite is now basic beekeeping. People talk about, oh, my great-grandfather had bees and he didn't have, well, he didn't have to put all these treatments on. Well, the varroa mite came over in the 80s. So when the varroa mite came into the country in the 80s, it changed beekeeping forever for us here. And if you're not managing your varroa mite populations, your bees aren't going to make it long term. Yes, we do see the hives. People, they're like, oh, I didn't put any treatments on. My bees made it through the winter. You do see that, and I would say those are probably more hygienic bees. I'm not sure if this is answering your question at all, but I just think there has to be a lot more research done when it comes to these wild bee colonies before we say that they have this great resistant to varroa mites.
What do we know about wild bees in Wisconsin?
Well, wild bees in Wisconsin, it depends
on... Wild honeybees.
Wild honeybees. Yes, we should clarify that in Wisconsin. The thing about it is, you won't find them in northern Wisconsin. And maybe I shouldn't make that a blanket claim. But the reality is that managed bees in north, and I'm talking, you know, like north of, like, say, Tomahawk. Now, when you get up by Lake Superior, you do have warmer temperatures up there. But generally speaking, when you're in northern Wisconsin, there just isn't enough time for the bees to build up a large enough population to build up enough stores to make it through the winter. It's just too cold. Managed bees barely can make it through the winter in some areas without either a bee house or some sort of winter preparation for them. And so in southern Wisconsin, you can have these feral colonies that are living in trees or buildings, stuff like that. But in northern Wisconsin, you won't find them.
Beekeeping in western Wisconsin is our topic. State Apiary Inspector April Kustov is the voice you just heard. She's our guest, along with Eau Claire beekeeper Corey Grody and Chippewa Falls beekeeper Don Hauser. Next up, we're joined by Pam Rasmussen of XL Energy to talk about efforts that power company is making to help pollinators, including honeybees. There's still time for your question, comment, or story about honeybees or beekeeping. Call us at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. Back in a minute. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and this is The West Side on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back talking beekeeping, and we continue with our guest beekeepers Don Hauser of Chippewa Falls and Corey Grody of Eau Claire and State Apiary Inspector April Kustov. We now welcome in Pam Rasmussen, a manager for siting and land rights with XL Energy. Pam Rasmussen, thanks for joining us.
No, thanks a lot, Dean.
Now, XL Energy has been involved in providing space and resources for pollinators since the company was called Northern States Power Company back some 30 years ago. What's the reasoning behind an energy company getting involved with bees and butterflies?
It goes down to the impact that we have on the landscape with the facilities that we have, and trying to find ways to balance our need for lands to put our transmission lines on, our power plants, and having proactive, positive uses along with those facilities. And it really came to ahead and really became more common for us, and really a more of a program about 5 years ago, when more of the issues about the bees as well as the monarch butterflies came out, and the company decided let's kind of do a more concerted joint effort on ways that we can maybe do a little bit more and bring more awareness to the issues for pollinators.
Now, you're working with the Chippewa Eau Claire County beekeepers on a new project, I understand. Can you describe that?
Yeah, so one of the main goals for our program is outreach and education, getting out and talking to people. And I went and talked to the Beekeeper Association back on a really cold, snowy day this past winter. Today is much nicer. And talked to them about our program and what we're doing. And so we have facilities in Eau Claire that we are creating habitat around, whether it's the solar garden near our Sky Park offices or up at Black Avenue near Quick Trip. We're trying to do some work there at a plant we have. We have a substation that's up in the Chippewa Falls area called Gravel Island, and it's right by the intersection of Highway 29 and 53 and 124. And when we were talking to the beekeepers, they were just highlighting that, you know, one of the problems that beekeepers have in the area is finding a place for their hives. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you know, this is kind of more of an isolated location that it might work out for you guys to maybe we can partner on it and see how it can work with having, you know, your group specifically having hives there. And we just are working to restore that whole area, all those acres to a pollinator habitat. So maybe we can do something joint there and see how it works out.
Don Hauser, you're on that committee that's working with XL on the pollinator project. What impact will this have on bees and beekeepers in our area?
This was a gift that we received. It was a surprise gift because when Pam came to us, we first learned about the habitat promotion. And then when we followed up on it, we learned that this Gravel Island site had already been planted with wildflowers and with prairie restoration type of plants. So we're entering into a contract with XL to use about 2.5 acres of that property to place hives at. Well, 2.5 acres can hold a lot of hives, and there are literally hundreds of acres beyond that 32-acre site that is potential habitat and nectar sources for bees. So our intention is to promote beekeepers, perhaps especially urban beekeepers who don't have the property, that they can find something in the immediate area that is prime habitat and have access to it. There are a lot of transmission lines, et cetera, that don't really have access, but Gravel Island is perfectly situated between Eau Claire and Chippewa for this activity.
So it's possible to have hives off-site from where you live or whatever, if your living space or your neighbors aren't accommodating, there are possibilities, and this would be one of those options.
Correct. If you're an apartment dweller who has a desire to be a beekeeper, this is a perfect situation for you because mm-hmm. with your investment of time and money and learning, you'll be able to manage bees at that site. We don't have all of the specifics worked out yet, but we're hoping that we can promote it to multiple beekeepers as opposed to let's take 3 beekeepers and let them put 100 hives on that mm-hmm. site. This is all about the hobbyist and the person who has limited access.
Yeah, and this isn't something new for us. We have an employee, he's now retired, but he has beehives at one of our power plants in St. Paul, Minnesota, our Highbridge plant, and he has special Highbridge honey that he gets out of his hives. And so it worked out really well in the middle of St. Paul for him to have his hives, and so we thought, Gravel Island could be a perfect opportunity to provide that opportunity for the people in the Eau Claire area. So it's definitely a test for us. We're not out looking for a lot of different beekeepers to come ask us for property. This is a kind of an initial test to see how it works. But it's definitely nice to see the hobbyists be able to have something as well as, a lot of what we do is for the native pollinators too. So it's nice to have a balance between the two because you need both.
Yeah. How important are partnerships to these pollinator projects XL is making available?
They're the key. We really want to do stuff that we work with communities and adjacent landowners to create the habitat because if it's a partnership, you get more people involved, you get more engagement, you get more visibility. And so from our perspective, we don't want to be the ones out managing all the sites. We want to coordinate with others that can help us because in the end, it really isn't our business to manage all these sites. So we've got partnerships with communities throughout our service territory in the upper Midwest to do this. And we're really blessed because we've got great habitat in the upper Midwest to do these kind of things. So it kind of is pretty easy for us to find projects to work on.
And it's our club's intention to make this site an educational site as well, to bring in beginning beekeepers and provide them mentorship and practice good beekeeping habits for beekeepers. So we can use that to promote beekeeping in general, but also good beekeeping.
As we approach the close of today's program, I want to bring it back to our beekeepers. Corey Grody, if someone heard something today that makes them want to get into beekeeping, what kind of steps should they take?
Well, I think the first step is education itself. You know, our bee club does an excellent job of promoting and educating new beekeepers or anybody interested in general in beekeeping. Know what you're getting into, be educated about it, and make sure you know that it is not a cheap hobby.
Yeah, I can attest to that, having killed a couple of packages of bees in the last 2 years. Don Hauser, we're in the midst of a nectar flow right now when bees are bringing in nectar to build up their honey stores for the winter. And if we're lucky, put in a little surplus that the beekeepers can collect or use or sell. Last year in the state marked a 10-year low in Wisconsin honey production. How are things looking this year for honey?
Well, I think that can change from beekeeper to beekeeper. So some are doing quite well. Some have struggled with that late spring that we had that went into all the way into June. That's why we're seeing it a little bit later. I would like to, before we finish, to talk about our association, mm-hmm. if we could.
Sure.
We've been in existence for 70 years.
Wow.
Actually, 77 years. So this has been a long-term club for everyone. We have about 70 members. Our primary reason for getting together is to provide that association with other beekeepers, whether they be new, experienced, long-term, whatever. That association really allows for education among all of the beekeepers. My wife calls it a support group, and in some ways she's right, because
we cry on each other's shoulders.
We cry on each other's shoulders, and we celebrate some successes along the way. So membership in that organization is very inexpensive, $10 for a family membership per year. So it's not about that kind of association. It's to promote beekeeping in the Chippewa Valley.
April Kustoff, as we're closing here, what kind of processing is needed in order for beekeepers to sell their honey? You mentioned that you do some inspections regarding shipment of bees, but is honey production a part of your duty as well?
No, it's actually not. But if you go on, if you have any questions about, okay, so I have all the surplus honey, I want to sell it, I want to sell it through business, I want to sell it at a farmer's market, go to the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture website. We've got great resources on there for beekeepers, but also it'll list all the regulations, what you have to follow in order to sell your honey, whether it's through a business or at a farmer's market or at the end of your driveway.
And Don Hauser, for those local beekeepers who do offer honey for sale, where can that honey be found? I mean, is it in stores? Is it at farmer's markets? What's the best
source? A few people
source?
Have it in stores. More people have it in the farmer's market, but most of us are selling it by word of mouth, and we have our regular customers, and we give a lot of honey away, because if it's going well, sometimes you have more honey than you can possibly sell.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned at the beginning of the show that you discovered beekeeping at the Northern Wisconsin State Fair. The club will have a booth at the Northern Wisconsin State Fair in Chippewa Falls this Wednesday through Sunday. What will people see if they pop in there this week?
What draws in most of the kids, especially, and adults for that matter, are the live display that we have of honeybees. They always like to find the queen in there, and they ask the question, does that queen come with a mark on it? And the answer is no. We put that mark on it so that you can see it in this display case. And a number of recipes. They will also get a chance to order yard signs that promote beekeeping.
So that's at the Northern Wisconsin State Fair.
And come and talk to us.
Thanks to our guest this hour, Don Hauser of Chippewa Falls, the voice you just heard, the president of the Chippewa-Eau Claire County Beekeepers Association, Corey Grody of Eau Claire, an urban beekeeper who's also a member of the Chippewa-Eau Claire County Beekeepers, April Kustoff, who is an apiary inspector with the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, and Pam Rasmussen, the manager for siting and land rights with XL Energy. Clara Neipert produced this segment. Our on-air producers were Catherine Thomas and Mort Cypress. Thanks also to Allison Schulze and Kate Spranger for publicity, and John Davis for developing the digital article from this program. Next week, we spend an hour talking about homelessness in Western Wisconsin. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Join us next week on the West Side here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.